It's been a long week. We've talked about Georgia's ongoing water war with Florida. We talked about the obscure heroes of Yiddish literature. So as we do every Friday, let's take a breath. We've gathered a group of smart people to help us kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened this week. It's time for the break room.
A horse walks into a bar and the bartender says, "Why the long face?"
"Hey, screw you."
"Whoa!
What the hell's your problem?"
"You're my problem, dude. That joke is offensive."
Then she's like, "Let's be best friends." And I was like, "Sure, I'll give that my best shot too." So we're best friends now.
This arbitrary and oppressive idea of consent, which totally destroys the complexities and subtleties and complicated nature of many relationships.
Joining us in the break room this week, Hector Fernandez, professor of world languages and cultures at Georgia State University. H.B. Cho is a reporter for the Korean Daily. Roxanne Donovan. I don't know what I said. She's a professor of psychology at Kennesaw State University. And the beloved Ravi Medved, an Atlanta-based LGBT educator and activist. Welcome and happy Friday all.
Good morning.
Hello.
Morning.
So let's talk about what's happening in Georgia this week. The leaders of the Democratic Party are here. Their goal is to elect a new party chair. Former chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz stepped down last summer, and there is a big pool. There are 10 candidates. So far, they're all friends.
I can assure you that when Tom was the Secretary of Labor, I had no better friend over there. He was a tireless advocate, and I want everybody supporting me to know that I respect him. I like him.
That's the voice of U.S. Representative Keith Ellison. He's the progressive frontrunner for the role. He's talking about his rival, Tom Perez. But my question is, why are the Democrats in Georgia, for a red state that went for Trump, why hold your major Democratic Party event here?
So we are a red state, but our margin of victory was actually smaller than a lot of the swing states. So we are far more purple-ish, purple-leaning, will soon be purple, than Ohio was, than Pennsylvania was, than North Carolina was. You know, really, I think people have been ignoring us for a long time, but the next battlefront really is going to be down here.
So there's the hope that we're going to be a purple state in 2020, but it's also easy to get to Atlanta. So maybe that's why.
Thank you, Delta. There were many people who predicted Georgia was going to go purple, or even blue in 2016.
There are those people every election.
Yeah, every election.
True, but we are getting closer and closer than we've ever been. We won in Gwinnett. We won in Cobb County. I mean, Cobb County, like, those are not places we're
Cobb
supposed
County
to win, and we
Clinton,
are.
Surprisingly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you
true.
Can't take people for granted. I mean, I think the thing is the Democrats realize finally that they need the South. I mean, if they're going to get Congress, if they're going to get the White House, they need the South. They gave up too easily in the South, so it's healthy for them to play as a visiting team every now and then, like the Republicans do all the time.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's talk about Milo Yiannopoulos.
I think in the gay world, some of the most important, enriching, and incredibly, life-affirming, important, shaping relationships very often between younger boys and older men, can be hugely positive experiences.
Okay, those were the comments Milo made. It was a recently surfaced internet video. He's basically justifying sex between adults and minors there. Retribution was swift. He lost his book deal with Simon & Schuster. He was not allowed to appear at CPAC. He resigned his post as editor at Breitbart News. But here's the thing. If you've been paying attention to Milo Yiannopoulos at all, you know that he said some very egregious, questionable, hateful things. So why this one? I mean, I'm not saying that talking about sex between minors and adults is not awful if you're justifying it, but there have been other awful things. So why this one? Did it bring down the hammer?
So everything he has said up until now has really been a hyperbolic version of what the Republican Party already thinks. The anti-trans, anti-women, anti-Muslim, all of that stuff. But all of a sudden, he starts going after boys and men and talking about them, and now all of these men who previously have stood by him and said no, he should be allowed to speak, realize, oh my gosh, we were young boys once. He's talking about us, and now that you're talking about us, you've gone way too far, and we can't accept that. It's absolutely because it was about boys and men, and it's really the manifestation of misogyny, that misogyny and transphobia and homophobia is all okay, but once you start talking about men, you've crossed a line.
How much of it was not wanting to be associated with that opinion?
But how far You know, he says these terrible things about all these other groups, and they're really okay with that. I mean, these people were absolutely okay with everything else he said.
Yeah, but there's a qualitative difference. It's a matter that there's a certain degree of hatred that is covered by freedom of speech. But pedophilia, that's never a matter of contemplation, you know? You can hate from afar, but pedophilia doesn't work that way.
Absolutely, but he's also been peddling racism. He's been peddling Islamophobia.
And in some cases, violence.
He's absolutely been peddling violence. He started a huge racist backlash against Leslie Jones. He's done all kinds of things that really, at a certain point, you know, why haven't... I think my question is not why now, it's why didn't they do something before?
Took so long.
Yeah. I think the humanity of kids goes unquestioned, right? And what he said was egregious, and he's a gay man talking about sex with young boys, and given the stereotypes and the homophobia that we have in the community.
Factually unfounded, I need to point out.
Factually unfounded, exactly. And given the homophobia we have in our society, I think that added an extra layer to an already egregious comment.
There are definitely right-wing people across the world now, many of whom live in, you know, Georgia, maybe Macon, Georgia, who are now using Milo's comments to say, look, we've been telling you there's something wrong with gay people all along, and you were never listening.
They're talking about their own prejudice, basically.
He was the gay young Jew person that was really talking about. So he was kind of seen as a crusader for PC, like a ultimate version of the PC police. But then now he's kind of talking about them. Then it turned upside down.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So it turns out, according to study at least, dogs might not like Milo. new research published in the journal Neuroscience and Behavioral Reviews finds dogs can tell when someone is a jerk.
Get out of here. I'll kill you. But come back tomorrow, same time. I get very sad on Sundays when you're not here.
Maybe the mailman is not such a bad guy, but this study found that dogs have their own very acute sense of morality. When they feel a human is behaving poorly, they avoid them. Oh, so obviously, do you buy this?
I love everything about this study. So there's a part of me that does not want to anthropomorphize dogs, right?
Yes.
But there's this other part of me as a dog owner that I see how my dogs act and how they pick up on things, like when I'm about to travel, they see the suitcase, they don't interact with me as much. And I think as we become more sophisticated in studying this, we're going to find out that our animals have much more understanding of our behavior and much more social complexity.
They're judging us, though.
And they should, because some of us need to be judged.
I will say, I'm not sure I really believe the study, but there's a reason I don't own dogs. So,
how can
you're a jerk?
Say that? How can you say that? I mean, dogs know when people are going to hurt them, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
So basically, if you hurt an animal, you're a jerk, you know?
Oh, without a doubt.
Thus, the animal has morality, you know? Yeah. The animal definitely knows what's going on.
I see.
I can't tell if... Maybe dogs are able to tell when we're being jerks, but I don't know if they care, because I don't own dogs, or I've never owned a dog, and I was watching Super Bowl at a friend's house who does own a dog, and it was just... trying to steal my food off of my plate
we're distracted.
And by around halftime, I was pretty nice to it. I was just kind of pushing the plate away from its reach. But then by like fourth quarter, I was starting to be more agitated because of the score. And then I was a little bit more mean to the dog. I should confess. And the dog didn't seem to be deterred. It didn't care whether I was.
Oh, but you're talking about the pursuit of food.
Yeah.
Morality goes out the window.
That's major motivation.
In people,
there.
Too.
Yeah absolutely. and other things as well. But there's a distinction. If you're a cat owner, you know there's a distinction between the way cats judge you and dogs.
Yeah, but cats
have no morality.
Right.
I'm
no,
sorry.
They're just bad in general. Cats are just
no
mean.
No.
Cats have no
off
morality.
The truck.
I'm sorry.
Complaints to Hector at complaints.
I draw the line there.
Cats are beautiful creatures, and I love them.
But I have found that cats don't care if you're a jerk. In fact, if you hate cats, they're more likely to sit on your lap.
No, if you don't make eye contact with cats, they're more likely to sit on your lap. But if you treat cats badly, be prepared to get scratched.
For the retribution. For the listeners out there, one of the ways that they tested this is that somebody would, a human being would ask for help opening a jar. And some of the people would go, absolutely, and go help them. And then they forced some of the people to say, no, screw you, and walk away. And if you are among those people who refuse to help, the dogs then avoided that person pretty categorically. And it didn't matter what the breed of the dog was. It didn't matter how old they were. They didn't want to hang around the person who didn't help. Which is kind of a different distinction than the story that HB was talking about, right? They're recognizing someone who is not helpful to someone else as opposed to the way
to
they treat them.
To someone else? Or is it because the jar has food in it and they realize that person's not going
to
feed
Oh, you're bringing
them.
It back to food again. It is an important distinction that they're actually paying attention to the way humans are treating each other, right? I mean, Roxanne, you're the psychologist here.
So
I'm not saying you're a dog psychologist. It's a slippery slope, and I'm going to put on my skis.
It's a slippery slope. But I think dogs have to, in order to adapt because they're household animals, they have to be able to look at what humans are doing and make determinations about their own safety. So this might actually be adaptive, and I'm sticking to it.
You know, there are plenty of people that say, if you don't like my pet, then I won't date you. Right? I mean, there's people who make that distinction. Oh, see, you accept that.
Well, pets, absolutely. Pets eventually resemble their owners, right? So if you don't like the pet, you're not going to like the owner.
Wait, hold on. You can't just throw that out there. Pets eventually resemble their owners physically or behaviorally?
No, personality-wise, psychologically, you know, they pick up traits. They pretty much like what the owner likes. They resemble the owner and their behavior.
Do the pets resemble the owners, or do the owners resemble their pets?
It's the other way around.
Now we're getting... So if I meet a dog that's a jerk, I avoid the owner? You're throwing it the other way.
Well, no, chances are you will make the dog to be an unjerk. Because you're nice.
See, this is going very deep, and we really need listeners to weigh in here.
Or very shallow.
Yeah, exactly.
Dogs are not shallow.
No. So we definitely need listeners to weigh in, especially if you have complaints about Hector Fernandez saying that cats are amoral, evil creatures. Well,
they're beautiful. Beautiful.
Okay, have we thought about bringing dogs around Milo?
Milo Yiannopoulos, and seeing whether they avoid
him.
Yeah.
They would run away from him.
That might be the ultimate test. Okay, listen. Again, we need you to respond. You know how to reach us, 404-500-9457. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at OST Talk and let us know what you think. It is Friday, and we are hanging out in the break room. When we come back, we'll talk about crime rates, whether or not moving frequently makes you lose your friends, and it's all coming up from On Second Thought. We're back. I'm Celeste Headley. This is On Second Thought. We're having coffee and conversation in the break room. My guests are Robbie Medwed, Atlanta-based LGBT educator, Roxanne Donovan of Kennesaw State, Hector Fernandez of Georgia State, and HB Cho, a reporter with Korean Daily. And we want to say a big thanks to Savannah Coffee Roasters. They donate the coffee that we drink, and it is delicious. You can find it online at savannahcoffee.com. We have a few responses from listeners. Hector appears to have not complaints, but praise. Edward Austin Hall, he's feeling vindicated. Edward Austin Hall tweets, cats, as Tolkien once characterized them, are the fauna of Mordor. I live with three of them. And Joel Cook says, I'm with Hector. Cats, meh. how strong are your friendships?
We're the three best friends that anyone could have. We're the three best friends that anyone can have. And we're always gonna hang out.
Okay, if you do want to keep your friends, you should probably not move. A new study that was published in the Wiley Online Library finds the more often that someone moves from place to place, the likelier they are to think of their relationships as disposable. Now, I have moved almost every 2 years for most of my adult life. So I am going to recuse myself from this conversation. What do we think?
I don't want to question the research, but if I have any indication, I've had students who moved around a lot when they were growing up, courtesy of the U.S. Armed Forces, And some of them have even traveled with me and studied abroad programs. And if they crave anything at all, it's stability and deep relationships.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah, I've moved around a lot. I've lived in other countries. I've lived in other cities. But it's definitely hard to hold on to relationships when you move. There are people that you see every day because they're in your classes. They're your neighbors. You know, those folks, I would say, are much more surface-level friendships. But on the other hand, there are definitely a set group of friends that I have from no matter where I've lived. And I will say that Facebook and social media has made that so much easier. Mm-hmm. I can keep really close bonds with a lot of those people. But there are definitely a lot of people we've dropped through connection. We just don't hang out as much. We don't talk as much because we don't see each other in the same city, and it's a lot harder.
I never really moved as an adult, and I guess that's why I just keep feeling abandoned by my friends.
Who are in Korea?
So you're on the other end of it. You're the
one that's being disposed of. And it just kind of explains the way that I felt about my relationships with my friends, some of my friends, I think, because a lot of them just, you know.
You feel disposable.
Especially after college. Build up all these friendships. And if you happen to live in the same state as your college, then all the other, you know, majority of your friends move out to New York.
I keep up with my best friend from college, from undergraduate, you know, and he lives in New Zealand. And that's you know, many years.
So now I feel bad saying what I'm going to say after what HB said. For a 12-year period, I lived in 6 different states. And my belief about friends is you invest deeply in the moment and you're thankful for them in the moment. But some are for a reason, some are for a season, and some are for a lifetime. And not all of them are going to be for a lifetime. Enjoy it while it's happening.
That should go on a throw pillow.
Yeah.
It's not my saying, but it is a saying.
I will say, when I went to grad school, I was living, you know, across the world in another country, and I was there for 2 years, and I had people I met who said, look, I live here permanently, you're here for 2 years, we're not going to become best friends because I don't want to lose a friend when you decide that it's time to go back to America. And, you know, that's a very common thing. You go somewhere for 6 months, 1 year. The people who are there long-term don't want to invest and lose you.
Wow, but that's impoverishing. If you follow that criterion, then basically, who are you going to meet?
They met people who live there all year long. I broke some of them down and became friends anyway. But still.
You know, I don't do shallow.
Okay. Let's move on and talk about, I guess this would be relationships gone really bad. We're going to talk about murder. last year, crime was down in Atlanta, almost 30%. And it looks like that's pretty similar all across the country. But the murder rate in some cities has gone up in more than 10% in the last 2 years. And the clearance rate, that's the number of solved murder cases versus open cases, is down 30% since the 60s. Overall, nationwide, murders have gone down, but we're solving fewer and fewer of them. With all the improvements in technology, and if you watch any of these crime shows, right, it feels like, how could anybody get away? Why is the solve rate going down?
There's a lack of community. I mean, we're generating a very lonely way of life. I mean, if somebody dies,
we're disposing of our friends.
But that's not how.
Case in point.
But we're not disposing of our friends through murder.
But if people don't notice you're dead, or people can't solve the case in terms of who killed you, it's basically you were not a very integral part of your community. You know, and I say that for the people who have died, and I say that for who are supposed to do justice, you know, after them.
I think there's another part with the technology. You know, every time the military, the police, anyone wants to improve their technology, they turn to the criminals who have reformed. And they say, like, show us your secrets. Show us, like, we turn to hackers all the time to say, help us make this safer. I think that no matter how advanced we get in our above board institutions, it's always going to be the underground folks who are a step ahead. They're always going to have something better, something. They're going to know how to outsmart a lot of this technology in a way that we can keep trying to keep up with, but we're not going to quite get there every time.
But a lot of murders are actually crimes of passion, so there's not a lot of premeditation in them. But I think the community issue. This might be community distrust. So why should I talk to the police if I don't trust that the police have justice in mind mm-hmm. for my community? Mm-hmm. It may be that police are not trained necessarily technologically in the way that Robbie's talking about. But there's also a shrinking tax base. And if we don't have enough police to follow the crimes through to the end, if their caseload is too high, and we're going to have to really take a look at that, because do we have enough police? Are they trained well enough? And do they have the time to follow the multitude of leads that they may get in order to close the case?
All the while building relationships with the community they're supposed
right.
to be serving.
Right. Exactly.
And the stats leave open the possibility of kind of rampant and unknown increase in serial killings, right?
Yeah.
And it's not just the police. I mean, Robbie was you were mentioning how police
just so we
to
can
the
terrify
police.
Everyone on this. Yeah.
But it's also Hollywood seems to be turning to former criminals about their new kind of more extreme version. I mean, a display of crime.
Yeah, this article actually makes it appear that there are way more serial killers than
we might think.
Than we might think. Uh-huh. Happy Friday, everyone.
Good reason to keep the dog around to tell you who's nice.
Okay.
That's uplifting.
Let's move on. President Trump, everybody knows, not a fan of the Environmental Protection Agency. Here's a little bit of what he wants to see happen.
Opening federal lands for oil and gas production, opening offshore areas, and revoking policies that are imposing unnecessary restrictions on innovative new exploration.
Trump has said the nation's environmental regulations are out of control. Now, some hope groups are asking the president to just get rid of the Endangered Species Act. It was instituted in 1973. The law, quote, allows the federal government to protect certain species by designating them as threatened or endangered, preserving habitat, and outlawing hunts, end quote. Now, the Endangered Species Act has had some very notable, surprising successes. The bald eagle happens to be among those. The law, though, they says, allows predators like wolves, and some people don't want wolves to be around. So what do you think? Would you support the removal of the Endangered Species Act?
That's sick and twisted. I'm sorry. I mean, if the animals go, we're going to lose a lot of biological information, a lot of genetic information. Aside from the fact that, you know, animals are beautiful. They're good for our soul, you know. We have to be reminded that they came with us. They're around us.
But protecting these little owls is expensive for corporations.
It might be expensive, but if that's the only reason not to get rid of animals, it's not a good enough reason for me. This is, you know, my hardline liberal coming out. Like, great, we'll spend the money, but I cannot think of a single reason, a logical reason, that we should be allowed to kill an entire species out of existence. I just read an article about the reintroduction of wolves to Yellowstone.
Yeah.
They said not only have the wolves really been successful, they've actually fixed the environment. They have gotten rid of certain predators like the deer who are, they changed the course of the rivers.
Yes.
Just by putting the wolves
the
back in.
The overpopulation of deer and elk has been a problem in the West.
Then they've stopped the destruction of the environment because the deer weren't eating all the ground cover anymore. They really put it back to a fully functioning ecosystem.
Yeah, in the Grand Canyon also, that used to have native panthers, which they completely eliminated. And since then, the state has had a real problem. It's been very expensive because the elk population is out of control. H.P. Cho, could we get rid of this? And, you know, one of the arguments is that market forces will push corporations to act responsibly.
I can't really get my head wrapped around the idea because we are very good at predicting what's going to happen to the ecosystem when we eliminate or introduce a new new species in a given land. So somehow saying that we can do away with certain animals in certain area because and we're going to be okay and the ecosystem is going to adapt to it.
Yeah,
I think that is really irresponsible and not really supported by research that we can point to.
Oh, research smishers. Okay, if you're just joining us, we're hanging out in the break room. We have H.P. Cho with us from Korean Daily, Robbie Medwed, LGBT educator and activist, Roxanne Donovan of Kennesaw State, and Hector Fernandez of Georgia State. I want to read this email we just got, hearkening back to our conversation about the morality of dogs. He says, Jason says, we have two rescues, both from dire circumstances. Both are very sensitive to people. They know when people are not worth their affection. If voices are raised, June, my blue, will intervene with kisses to shut down the tension. Cash, my red, doesn't like men in hats, probably due to prior abuse. by a man in a hat. They are both loving, affectionate, and giving. Just don't be a jerk. Which is kind of good life advice, isn't it? Okay, so speaking of being a jerk, sometimes I guess people can be an unintentional a jerk. How easily do you get offended?
I get it. You don't like my music because I'm gay. You can't handle a gay man's music.
No. I'm trying to work here, and that music is weirdly sexual.
Oh, I see. So my sexuality is weird.
Some writers are very concerned about offending readers. Novelists have started to employ sensitivity readers. They check books for offensive or alienating passages before those books are published. But can you imagine if Faulkner, Nabokov, Twain had sensitivity readers? Is there a danger in making art too careful? Hector, you're already shaking your head.
Yeah, because it makes no sense. Reading is subjective, and literature as a product of the culture has to reflect the culture with its imperfections. If people keep on going along this route, they're going to produce, stuff that is going to be politely unreal and ultimately socially and culturally irrelevant. There's no such thing as, you have to show the imperfections of who we are, that there's a lesson there. There's to be learned.
There's a difference between showing the imperfections and even getting into hard conversations and getting the details wrong. If you want to have a story about somebody from another race, another culture, another thing that you're not sure of, having somebody who is aware of that culture just to make sure you're getting the details right is a huge thing. Writers use fact checkers all the time. They go to experts in terms of medical stuff, in terms of whatever it might be. I think
that's different. That's research. You check on stuff before you say anything, before you write anything. This is about people reading,
No, it is about authentic storytelling. If you're speaking about a person that is beyond your own experience, I think it behooves you to make sure that you're capturing that story in as real a way as it would be likely. And I think these people are doing this when they are writing outside their own experience. So if we want we want to limit unintended consequences and increase the authenticity of storytelling as it relates to our society, then yeah, you need people to kind of check
that. That's why you do
that.
Your research, basically.
Right. I think an interesting question would be if Milo, his last name,
Milo Yiannopoulos,
if he were to write a novel based on his experience as a young boy being sexually abused and make it sound like he's justifying that relationship as somewhat fulfilling. Is that going to be too much still?
But I think that's a very different thing. If you want to write from your perspective and tell your story, no problem. If I want to write from someone else's perspective and get that right, then I'm going to employ somebody. And by the way, no one's forcing these authors into this. They are saying, look, I know I'm writing about something that I'm not completely familiar with. Let me double check it. And it's not to say they're going to get rid of slurs or things. You read through Twain, all of that kind of stuff. He's got the slurs. That's not going to say they're going to disappear because they're there for a reason and they move the story. It's just going to say if he's going to talk about Jim the Slave's life as being all happy, somebody come in and say, you know what? That's not really historically accurate for what you're doing.
All right. For in the 2 minutes that we have left, let's talk about transparency. This is something we discussed with Christina Torres of the AJC, the fact that you're not allowed to video or stream from the Senate, the Georgia Senate. What do we think about this? Should we be allowed to watch the proceedings of committee meetings and the Senate working?
Absolutely. We should be able to watch everything. They're working for us.
Yeah, they need to be beholden to the citizenry that voted them in. And I want to make sure they're holding the citizenry's ideas and policies based on what the citizens of Georgia or the United States and Georgia want. What if they're not? What if it's the lobbies? What if it's businesses? I want as much transparency as possible to see who my elected officials are beholden to.
But one of the defendants of this, the being exempt from open records laws, it says if you want to come watch the Senate, come.
And it's an access issue. Not everyone can take off work and drive to the Capitol, to the Golden Dome, in order to be able to watch this. That is so privileged
and
that I can't even tell you.
I will say, as someone who has spent lots of time down at the Capitol, they're not so transparent once you're actually even in the room. They post committee meetings using a piece of paper on a bulletin board. So first you got to know where that is. You got to find the room. You got to get in there, sit in the right spot so you're not kicked out. But if somebody else comes in, they'll kick you out of the room if there's not space. You know, and you're really set outside, so you can't actually watch as much as possible, as much as people think you can. And it really, really, really hurts my heart to say that Josh McCune is right, but he's absolutely right on this one.
Because he's a Republican from Columbus, Georgia.
And
he's been pretty consistent about ethics issues and transparency issues.
He absolutely has been.
And what do they have to hide?
And I have friends who've been and bring their own phone, and they start Periscoping, and they've gotten kicked out.
Periscope, the app that allows you to live stream. We are out of time in the break room. I want to say thank you to everyone. Roxanne Donovan, professor of psychology at Kennesaw State. Robbie Medwed, LGBT educator and activist. H.B. Cho, reporter with Korean Daily. And Hector Fernandez, professor at Georgia State. Of course, we need to get you guys to weigh in. All of you out there listening, and you know how to do that. Call us at 404-500-9457. We're on Twitter at OST Talker. You can also post to Facebook.